Section 3, How the People Lived. As you read, look for why South Carolina's population increased despite deadly outbreaks of disease. The characteristics of Charlestown's Golden Age. How education, recreation, and religion were practiced in colonial South Carolina. Terms, apprentice, Dock Street Theater, Great Awakening. South Carolinians of the 18th century developed a unique culture. No other colony had exactly the same blend of races, ethnic groups, religious connections, cultural backgrounds, and social expectations as those that existed here. As we have seen, the three main racial groups, Native Americans, Africans, and Europeans, influenced one another in more ways than any group realized or wanted to admit. Growing population. By the middle of the 18th century, the population of South Carolina was the fastest growing of the 13 colonies. Much of that increase was from importation of slaves, but many people came from Europe and many more from colonies farther north. Not much of the growth came from natural increase. The death rate was about as high as the birth rate. Probably 8 out of 10 children died before becoming adults. About 1/3 of the slaves died within their first 3 years in America. The horrible death rates were caused by an unhealthy environment that produced 59 major outbreaks of yellow fever, smallpox, influenza, malaria, and other diseases during South Carolina's colonial era. Sometimes an epidemic wiped out whole families. Parents needed to have several children if they hoped to carry on the family heritage and have help with their work. In 1760, smallpox broke out among the Cherokee in the Blue Ridge, killing 1/3 of the tribe within the colony. The disease spread to the Catawba, who lost 2/3 of the tribe, leaving only about 500 living members. Soldiers fighting the Cherokee carried the disease to Charlestown, where about 6,000 of the 8,000 residents became ill, and 730 died. Doctors knew about inoculations, but when several persons died even after inoculations, the legislature forbade the procedure that might have saved many lives. One traveler summed up South Carolina in this colonial era this way, quote, "In the spring, a paradise, in the summer, a hell, and in the autumn, a hospital," end quote. Charlestown enters a golden age. In spite of high death rates, Charlestown flourished as a city. Historians claim the city began a golden age in the mid-18th century. For several decades, it was one of the premier cities in America. The five major cities in British North America were Charlestown, Boston, Philadelphia, New York, and Newport, Rhode Island, all port cities. Charlestown was by far the wealthiest per capita. Many residents were wealthy enough to summer in cooler, healthier Newport and to send their sons to England for education. The city's first newspaper was published in 1732. By the 1770s, there were 3 newspapers for a white population of about 6,000. Regular mail service to the other colonies started in 1738. Later, regular mail service to England began. The wealthy elite created clubs and societies to promote charity, education, science, and cultural activities such as music and theater. The St. Cecilia Society sponsored musical events and dances. A library society, established in 1755, became a source of reading material and was a rallying point for people interested in ideas and education. Charlestown residents were developing a sense of confidence, independence, and community, even within a very class-conscious society. Many of the impressive homes you can see as you walk about in Charleston today were built in this era. two distinctive patterns developed. The single house was one room wide with its narrow side to the street. To one side was a door leading to the porch. The front door to the house was from the porch, which faced a garden. The double house faced the street and was usually two rooms wide with a hallway in the center. Most of the lots were deep, allowing for smaller buildings for cooking and washing and to house slaves and horses. The elaborate furnishings for the houses of the elite were often imported, but Charlestown had some very skilled furniture and cabinet makers, such as Thomas Elf, whose work is still highly prized. Visitors from other colonies marveled at the wealth of the city. Even in a golden age, not all was golden. It was still the 18th century. Diseases still took their horrible toll. People still emptied their chamber pots into the sewage ditches along the streets. A portion of the residents were poor, mostly women, children, the elderly, and the disabled. Some of these received aid from the government, some from charities set up by the wealthy elite. There was compassion for people in need through no fault of their own, but very little compassion for those who failed. Debtors usually ended up in prison. Education. South Carolina did not rank high among the 13 colonies in its efforts to educate its people. It was generally assumed that parents were responsible for their children's education. Some South Carolina parishes did establish schools, but most did not last very long. Usually, the wealthy hired private tutors for their children, then sent their sons to England for further education and possibly professional training in law or medicine. No colony sent more sons to England than South Carolina. Of course, no colony was as wealthy, and most other colonies had established their own colleges. The children of white artisans in Charlestown got a barely basic education, and then in their teens were placed as apprentices, those learning a trade under the supervision of skilled workers, for several years. Their parents had to pay for that training. Poor parents got very little assistance. The Free School Act of 1712 was named incorrectly. Most pupils had to pay tuition. Only a handful of the very needy were allowed in the school free. Educated men in Charlestown and the Low Country rice plantations tended to have a great interest in natural history and botany. Several of them became outstanding amateur botanists and scientists. Dr. Alexander Garden was one of the most famous. He was known in America and Europe for his study and description of South Carolina's fascinating plant life. Dr. John Lining studied yellow fever, made the earliest extensive weather records in America, and experimented with electricity like his friend Benjamin Franklin. In 1773, Charles Townes's amateur scientist established the first public city museum in North America, emphasizing the natural history of South Carolina. That Charleston Museum is still a fine educational institution. In the upcountry, there was very little opportunity for formal education. Here and there, a preacher might provide a little schooling for the children of his congregation in the three R's, reading, writing, and arithmetic. Literate parents might do the same for their children, but unfortunately, the majority of Carolinians of either Low Country or Up Country, black or white, were illiterate until near the end of the 19th century. Recreation. South Carolina society had inherited from the original Barbadian settlers the determination to have fun. Life was short and uncertain. New England settlers responded to that fact by making serious preparations for the next life. Carolinians' response was to enjoy life as much as possible here and now. Charlestown, the center of social activities for the Low Country, had a very active social season during the winter and early spring. The elite enjoyed concerts and balls. St. Philip's and St. Michael's offered organ concerts. The first opera performed in America was staged in the city in 1735. Theater became very popular in Charlestown. The Dock Street Theater opened in 1736 and remains an important part of the city's cultural life today. All classes of free people attended the plays, though the ticket prices were costly. In a single season, 1773 to 1774, city residents could have seen 118 performances, including 11 of Shakespeare's plays. A very popular recreation for white men of all classes was drinking. Women evidently did not drink much, and it was illegal to sell or give liquor to Indians or slaves. In Charlestown, many taverns offered rum and whiskey, lodging, food, and halls for dances, concerts, and lectures. Some also provided billiards, card games, and an occasional bowling alley. One even offered a bathtub. Beyond Charlestown and the Low Country, recreation was also a priority. Several communities held fairs that lasted for several days. They were part business and part amusement. The favorite sports were cockfighting, bear baiting, and horse racing. Serious betting was involved. People of all classes attended those fairs, the elite, farmers, artisans, and even slaves. Hunting and fishing were favorite types of recreation that were also important sources of food for the family table. Religion. The Christian religion was important to South Carolinians in the 18th century, though they were more casual in their religious practices than the people of several other colonies. Much of the reading material in homes was religious in nature. In addition, there were practical books on agriculture and medicine in the homes of literate Carolinians. Charlestown had two Anglican churches, St. Philip's and St. Michael's. Beaufort and Georgetown each had one, as did each of the rural parishes laid out in the Lowcountry by the legislature. Charlestown also had churches for Presbyterians, Congregationalists, Baptists, Lutherans, and Huguenots. The Quakers had a meeting house, and Jews met in homes until a synagogue was built in 1794. In the upcountry, all these denominations had a presence, and a few churches were built. For example, the High Hills Baptist Church in present-day Sumter County. The lack of trained ministers to serve the rapidly growing population was a problem for most denominations. The Baptist Church had an advantage over the others because it did not insist on an educated clergy. The Anglican Church sent a colorful missionary, Charles Wood Mason, into the upcountry in the 1760s to promote the church among the frontier folk. He was accustomed to the more genteel manners of the Lowcountry elite and was shocked at the wild and rude behavior of the people he came to serve. He tried to teach them not to bring their dogs to church or talk or drink whiskey in church. Most of the upcountry people lived on farms scattered across the countryside. There were few villages or collections of people large enough to merit a church building, let alone a regular preacher. Many times, informal prayer meetings were held in homes. The main religious movement in the American colonies in the mid-18th century is called the Great Awakening. This was a revival movement seeking to awaken people to a new sense of religious awareness. It was led by emotional traveling preachers who often whipped their congregations into a wild religious frenzy. The Great Awakening had less effect in South Carolina than in most colonies because of opposition by Anglican clergymen. White churches in the 17th and 18th centuries made little effort to convert slaves to Christianity, but a few owners did. Those slaves who became Christian adapted their new religion to their old African religions, giving black Christianity a distinctive flavor. They added much more movement, song, dance, shouting, and hand clapping in their own worship services. They emphasized joy and hope, release from the bondage of sin, and perhaps secretly from other types of bondage. Some of the slaves had lived in Muslim countries and continued to practice their Islamic faith. many more continued their traditional tribal religions. Do you remember? 1. Define in sentence form, Apprentice, Dock Street Theater, Great Awakening. 2. What were the main reasons for population increase in colonial South Carolina and the main reason for a high death rate? 3. How did the wealthy people of colonial South Carolina usually educate their children?